You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarbera, and Americans for Truth is a single-issue organization devoted to opposing the homosexual activist movement. And we're here with our fourth and last segment of our interview with Gary Glenn, who's one of my favorite pro-family activists. Gary is the head of American Family Association of Michigan. He's an accomplished pro-family activist. He's not really liked on the left. Neither is Americans for Truth, of course. But for good reason, because he accomplishes a lot. They don't like that, and we're going to be talking about some of his accomplishments. Before we do, I want to say what, we're pre-recording on Wednesday, February 16th. Last Sunday, I went to Holy Name Cathedral in Chicago, and we stood outside. I was holding a sign that said, "Thank you, Cardinal George, for defending marriage." Because what was happening that Sunday was the Radical Gay Liberation Network, a very vicious anti-Christian homosexual activist group based in Chicago. It used to be called the Chicago Anti-Bashing Network, but this group is all about bashing, and they were bashing the Catholic Church that Sunday. They went out there with their signs about bigotry. They were chanting against hate, and all because the Catholic Archdiocese, especially Cardinal Francis George, oppose civil unions legislation, which just was enacted in Illinois. They oppose so-called homosexual marriage. And so the Gay Liberation Network got out in front of the church, despite a city ordinance that said you cannot have people within 150 feet of a church, I believe it is, within a half an hour of a service. And in this case, it was a mass. But the city decided not to enforce that law for fear of a lawsuit. And so there was the Gay Liberation Network out there chanting against so-called hate. And Gary, are you with us?
Here with you, Pete. Oh. After 4 weeks of this, I'm going to miss you.
We've become better friends. I suppose in homosexual lingo, that means you're automatically homosexuals. That's oftentimes what happens with the homosexual activists is they accuse any friendship of being homosexual. It's very bizarre. But Gary, this is another example here of the homosexual activists using that word hate to demonize an institution which stands for traditional Judeo-Christian values.
Well, we've talked about this in one of our previous segments. The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force put out a news release in 2007 in which they expressly accused Cardinal Mida of Detroit and me, the two of us by name, of being responsible of having induced the incited the alleged beating death of a 72-year-old homosexual man in Detroit. Turns out he died of arthritic paralysis, according to the police and the medical examiner's office. But in the first few days after this man died, homosexual activist groups were trumpeting this as the latest so-called hate crime. U.S. senators were going on the floor in Washington and saying, "This proves we need a federal hate crimes law." And National Gay and Lesbian Task Force said Cardinal Mida was responsible for the man's death simply because Cardinal Mida had supported the Marriage Protection Amendment on the ballot here in 2004.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. And Gary, we're going to get into some more of that. But before we do, I want to, since it's our last segment here, let's get to know Gary Glenn a little bit better. Now, I know you have political heroes, and you have given your kids, you have four kids?
Five
kids. You've given them some interesting names. So let's hear your kids' names.
Born son is named Heston. When he was still in the womb, I was working with Charlton Heston on a campaign back in the mid-1980s. So it's just a good thing he was born a boy because he was going to be named Heston regardless.
Yeah, we don't want to engender gender confusion, right?
And the second one, we were into H's.
Before you do that one, what were you working on with Charlton Heston? Because he was a great man.
Well, He did a television commercial for our campaign in Idaho in favor of a right-to-work law, which simply guarantees individual employees freedom to choose to join a union if they want to, free to refuse to join or pay dues or financially support a union without being discriminated against and fired as a result of that choice. Idaho voters supported it in large part, our polling said, because Charlton Heston had was the most credible spokesman on either side of that campaign.
Awesome. Okay, and what about kid number two?
Kid number two, we liked H's, so we went with Harrison for kid number two. At some time in his younger years, he had a big poster, full-size poster of Harrison Ford from Star Wars, so I guess he took after Harrison. The third one was Hunter. We were on an H roll. then we had a daughter, and we weren't going to go with Hillary. So
well, that would be a story. That would be a scandal in and of itself.
So instead,
Gary Glenn's kid was named Hillary. I don't know what I do there.
Instead, her name is Reagan, and it's spelled correctly. And she and I flew to Washington when President Reagan died, and attended his funeral and stood out in the sun for hours to march by the coffin. And then finally, our son, finally deciding to be bipartisan, our youngest son is named Thomas Jefferson Glenn after the founder of the Democratic Party. So we've got both bases covered.
Well, I shudder to think what Thomas Jefferson would think about today's Democratic Party, Gary.
That's true.
Didn't he have some pretty strong views about sodomy?
Well, he was considered a liberal in his day because in some of the colonial legal statutes, homosexuality was a capital offense. And Governor Jefferson of Virginia signed a law that called for castration. So he was considered a liberal because he actually signed into law something other than the death penalty. So, you know, 200 or 300 years ago, obviously, it was a different world.
It sure was, and I'll tell you what, I just wonder what our founding fathers would think of our society today. Not just homosexuality, but the incredible erosion of morality. And do you worry, Gary, about the world your kids are going to grow up into?
Well, I do. My kids and their ability to raise their kids in this environment. And my concern is focused primarily on the question of religious freedom. I consider the homosexual activist political agenda to be the single greatest threat to religious freedom in America today. That's not just some, quote, right-wing Christian perspective. You could post on your website, Pete, articles from the Washington Post, from National Public Radio, from the Los Angeles Times. None of those are house organs of the Christian right, but all of which detail the erosion of religious liberty directly resulting from the passage of so-called sexual orientation laws, and also the use of the law to compel society to treat other people's mental and emotional delusions as reality, as is the case with the concept of gender identity, in which the Maine Human Rights Commission, for example, is formulating regulations by which they intend to force the public schools to allow boys to use the women's restrooms, the girls' restrooms and locker rooms at school. If a boy wants to be on the girls' basketball team, 6-foot-5 boy says he's a girl, gets to be on the girls' basketball team. It's when I think in terms of religious liberty and being able to be true to their faith without facing criminal penalty or social sanction or discrimination, as is clearly the case today, and certainly in Europe and in Canada.
Didn't you just have a new case we talked off the air about in England, the latest atrocity there?
Well, now they're talking about allowing homosexual civil unions to take place in churches prior to what they're considering now, they could only be performed in a civil basis. You know, you had an Anglican bishop in Great Britain who was fined £80,000 and sentenced to re-education training because he refused to hire a 21-year-old young, openly homosexual man as a youth pastor. You had a Baptist pastor arrested on the streets of a city in England, just sometime last year, because he said to one individual on the street that the Bible defined homosexual behavior as being a sin. And the person who was offended went to the designated gay and lesbian relations police officer, who then arrested the Baptist preacher simply for what he said in a one-on-one conversation. You also had the recent case where the Christian owners of a bed and breakfast were fined because they refused to allow two men to share the same bed in their small bed and breakfast. And of course, you know, I assume your listeners are aware of Pastor Åke Green in Sweden, who was sentenced to 30 days in jail for a sermon he gave from the pulpit from Corinthians, talking about homosexual behavior being a sin.
And Gary, you know what, if to somebody who would say, well, these are all occurring in foreign countries, we have had direct persecution here in the United States. We went over that before, but I don't think we talked about the case of the Nigerian in New York City who wanted to put up a billboard. He did put up a billboard in which he mentioned Old Testament prohibitions against homosexuality, and that was forced down.
Well, and, you know, you look at Canada, where the Bishop of Saskatchewan was hauled before the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal because he wrote in his own church newsletter that marriage ought to be between a man and a woman. You had the Christians arrested on the streets of Philadelphia. I think it was 5 years ago, 11 Christians, including an African-American grandmother, who went to on a city street, on the public streets of at a gay pride festival, and read from the Bible, and were arrested and charged with a hate crime.
Yeah, it's all around us, and it's getting worse, and that's why we need groups like American Family Association of Michigan and Americans for Truth to stand for truth. We're going to be talking with Gary about Mitt Romney, whether he's really deserves his reputation as one defending traditional marriage, and a bunch of other things when we come back after the break. I'm Pete LaBarbera with Americans for Truth, AmericansForTruth.org. Welcome back to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarbera, president of Americans for Truth. We're based in Carroll Stream, Illinois, outside Chicago. I'm talking to my friend Gary Glenn, American Family Association of Michigan. He's based in Midland, Michigan, and Gary has done wonderful work. You can support him at afamichigan.org. That's afamichigan.org. You can support Americans for Truth at americansfortruth.org. Hit the donate button on the right side, or up at the top, at least. Gary, I want to go into the potential candidates and Republicans on the homosexual issue, but first I want you to recount, because I don't think we touched on this fully, your amazing campaign that you were the leader of, essentially, to restore and protect the definition of marriage between one man and one woman. Can you set it up for us and give us that in a few minutes?
You bet. Most of the other 10 states that had marriage amendments on the ballot in 2004 were reacting to the decision of the Massachusetts Supreme Court in October of 2003. But Michigan was about 6 months ahead of the game, or 4 or 5 months, whatever it was, because we were reacting to a June 2003 court decision by the Ontario Court across the border in Canada. And here in Michigan, that literally means across the bridge in Detroit or across the bridge at Port Huron or up in the UP. The Ontario court declared so-called homosexual marriage to be legal, and we envisioned homosexual activists in Detroit driving across the bridge, getting quote-unquote married under Ontario Canada law, coming back across the bridge, and then the only question was, how long would it take before the ACLU of Michigan filed a lawsuit demanding that Canadian homosexual marriage license be recognized in Michigan? So in June of 2003, we put out a news release calling on the legislature to put a marriage protection amendment before the voters of Michigan, and it did go into the legislature. We had to overcome opposition, somewhat surprisingly, only somewhat, from the Michigan Republican Party at the time, that wasn't sure that the Bush White House wanted a marriage protection amendment on the ballot. In late 2003, we confronted them over that, and they backed off. It did go before the Michigan legislature and fell a few votes short in the House of Representatives of getting the two-thirds required. And so we ended up in April of 2004 with the deadline for signatures to put it onto the ballot for a vote of the people being about July 1st of 2004. So we had roughly 10, 11, 12 weeks to gather 500,000 signatures.
Wow.
this was considered to be impossible based on prior petition gathering campaigns. We did not have the money to pay signature gatherers, as most of these signature gathering efforts do. And here we were sitting in the middle of April staring at a July 4th deadline. To complicate matters, Pete, the Michigan Catholic Conference, which strongly supported a marriage protection amendment, thought that it was so impossible to succeed that they thought it would be counterproductive to even try. And they put a letter out to every Catholic church in the state of Michigan saying that the Michigan Catholic Conference was opposed to this petition drive and would not participate. So, with that handicap, the largest single religious denomination in Michigan receiving a letter saying we're not, the Michigan Catholic Conference does not support this petition drive, nonetheless, absolutely miraculously, we turned in the first week of July 400, by our count, 486,000 signatures. I even had one report from the Secretary of State's office that when they had counted the signatures, that we had miscounted, and that it had come in not at 500,001 or 499,999, but that we had turned in precisely exactly 500,000 signatures.
Wait a minute. The official count said that you actually hit 500,000 signatures,
well,
exactly.
It's kind of murky as to whether or not it's official, because they discount some, they don't count others, they discredit some of the signatures, etc. But we did have one report that said that the number had been precisely 500,000.
Wow.
I mean, I think it was a miracle in the first place. If it was in fact exactly 500,000, all the more miraculous. And to get the Michigan Catholic Conference off the hook, from what I've already related, once it was on the ballot, the Catholic Church in Michigan became the single biggest financial supporter of the Marriage Protection Amendment once it was on the ballot. But the handicaps that we faced, the time constraints, the fact that the Catholic Conference had sent a letter out discouraging participation by Catholic churches, to have gotten that on the ballot and to be the first to have let out in response to the Canadian court decision, so that when the Massachusetts decision came along 5 months later, other states just said, let's do what Michigan's doing. Let's put a marriage protection amendment on the ballot. And as it turned out, there were 11 of those amendments approved by voters overwhelmingly. I think the average percentage vote in favor was 70% plus that first year in 2004. And here in Michigan, it got 59% of the vote, even though Michigan voted in favor of John Kerry. And every single city with a substantial African-American population, for example, voted in favor of the Marriage Protection Amendment. I think only two counties in the state, because University of Michigan and Michigan State University are located there, voted against the Marriage Protection Amendment.
Now, what was the exact language of that amendment, your amendment, Gary?
Well, let's see if I can quote it.
Well, give us the gist of it. It was strongly worded.
Yeah, to preserve and protect the benefits of marriage for society and for future generations of children, the union of one man and one woman in marriage shall be the only agreement recognized as a marriage or similar union for any purpose, period. And as the Michigan Court of Appeals said in responding to complaints from the opposition's attorneys who said that was vague, one of the justices of the Court of Appeals said, it may be broad, but it is not vague.
Right. Now, so you you worked on that, you got that amendment on, it passed 59%. It's not an exaggeration to say that the marriage amendments had a huge role in President Bush getting reelected in 2004.
I don't think there's any question about it, and specifically in Ohio, where, for example, the president got 6 percentage points higher among African Americans than he did anywhere else. But it was in spite of the Bush White House. I mean, we actually had the Michigan Republican Party chairman discouraging legislators from putting it on the ballot in late 2003, arguably, according to them, because they said the Bush White House wasn't sure it wanted it on the ballot. And I remember President Bush himself in an interview with Good Morning America less than a week before the election in 2004 coming out and saying that he was in favor of homosexual civil unions and specifically saying he disagreed with the Republican Party platform on that point. And we had people who were working phone banks in favor of the Marriage Protection Amendment who were also supporting the Bush campaign with their volunteer time as well, who walked out of Republican Party phone banks when they found out about Bush endorsing homosexual civil unions. So it was perhaps in spite of the president's personal position, and of course, in the years that have passed since, both his wife and daughter have now flat out endorsed so-called homosexual marriage.
Right. And then you get the Republicans who say that this is all just a cynical exercise to help Republicans, not understanding. Obviously, if you can get 500,000 signatures in a couple months and maybe a few more weeks after that time, this is not about wedge issue politics. This is about something that people believe in passionately. And yet you hear so many Republican hacks and Democratic hacks, liberal hacks, all just sort of dismissing this thing as, oh, it's just a cynical exercise to drum up the right wingers.
Well, and the liberals and Democrats and homosexual groups, of course, have long accused Karl Rove and George W. Bush of having put the marriage protection amendments on the ballot to do nothing but bring out the Republican vote. And yet I can tell you from personal experience and personally witnessing it that the Bush White House was not comfortable having a marriage protection amendment on the ballot early on in the process, which is precisely why the former chairman of the Michigan Republican Party was strong-arming Republican legislators not to put it on the ballot. So they were drug along kicking and screaming. So it discredit even
it's
though
amazing. It's amazing. There's only one mention of it in his book. I just got Bush's book. There's a single mention of the gay marriage issue, I think. So it's obviously was not a huge issue for him. But all right, let's move on, Gary. You did tremendous work on that, and it inspired. You know, it was crucial to motivating others to defend marriage, and that's what needs to happen here in Illinois. We need a marriage amendment where I live, and it's going to take a long, hard process to get it there, but we must get it there, because if we don't, the homosexual activists will pass, will succeed in pushing their counterfeit marriage on the people of Illinois. Now, Gary, let's talk about the Republican candidates. Let's take the rest of our time here. I want to start out, we got a minute and a half to the break. Tell us about Mitt Romney, because you have a lot of experience on Mitt Romney being there in Michigan where his father was once governor.
Yeah, that's true. Back in March of 2005, the Republican State Senate caucus invited Mitt Romney in to be the keynote speaker for its annual banquet. And we wrote a letter to members of the Republican Senate caucus at that time, all of whom were pro-life at the time, with perhaps one exception, but an overwhelmingly pro-life caucus, and simply brought to their attention, based on the research of his actual record, that Governor Romney in Massachusetts had aggressively promoted the notion of a woman's quote-unquote right to choose, had supported Roe v. Wade, had said as a candidate for governor, I do not take the position of a pro-life candidate. Even after claiming to have seen the light and reversed his position on that, had signed Romney Care, the precursor to Obamacare, into law, which included not only the individual mandate that everybody beats up appropriately Obamacare for, but also a $50 copay of the cost of an abortion on demand, paid for by taxpayers, signed into law by Mitt Romney.
No, wait a minute. So if somebody wants an abortion in under Romney Care, slap down $50, copay, they got it.
Yeah, and an abortion costs what these days? I don't know, $300, $400, $500. So the overwhelming majority being paid for by the taxpayers of Massachusetts.
That's something that I don't think many people know, Gary. In the political world,
a lot of things about Romney's record most people don't know.
Okay, and we'll get right back to that when we talk to Gary Glenn with American Family Association of Michigan. His website, afamichigan.org. We'll be right back.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your tax-deductible gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Welcome back to the Americans for Truth Hour. We're talking to Gary Glenn of American Family Association of Michigan, and we're talking about the Republican Party candidates or people, you know, these are also pro-family or are conservative leaders, so we need to know about their record. We're talking about Mitt Romney. He's heralded as the defender of marriage. He helped preserve marriage. That's what he's selling to the political world, Gary. What's the reality on that?
Well, and again, I assume it's because we're in Michigan, and Mitt Romney's father was governor of Michigan. When we sent this letter to the Republican Senate caucus, it became a national news story. And so from 2005 through 2008, I was repeatedly interviewed about Mitt Romney and his record, you know, on the issue that, your organization and mine spend a lot of time talking about as well, Pete. Mitt Romney was endorsed in his various candidacies for public office twice by the homosexual log cabin Republicans. When he ran against Ted Kennedy, he said he'd be a more effective advocate for the gay rights agenda if he was elected as a Republican, more effective than Ted Kennedy. He promised to be a co-sponsor of Barney Frank's federal gay rights legislation, Employment Non-Discrimination Act. He supported taxpayer financed same-sex benefits for Massachusetts state employees. He said that he personally disagreed with the Boy Scouts policy prohibiting openly homosexual scoutmasters. As a candidate for president, he publicly condemned Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Peter Pace, for saying that homosexual behavior was immoral. He expressed...
Well, wait a minute on that one. So in other words, he piled on poor General Pace, who made a wonderful statement, and then he got pilloried by the media and everybody, and Mitt Romney piles on and joins the crowd denouncing this great General Peter Pace.
Yeah, Larry King Live. When he was a candidate for governor in 2002, he opposed a state marriage protection amendment that pro-family groups were trying to get signatures for, even though his own wife and son had signed the petition. He condemned it, said he would vote against it if it was on the ballot, that being a measure that they tried to get in the Massachusetts Constitution before the Supreme Court issued its opinion illegitimately, in my opinion, imposing so-called homosexual marriage on the people of Massachusetts. The court had said that it found Massachusetts marriage law to be unconstitutional because it restricted marriage only to a man and a woman, and said the legislature should correct it and gave a deadline 6 months thereafter. The legislature simply ignored the other branch of government, there being co-equal branches with a system of checks and balances. Legislature ignored what the state Supreme Court said. Governor Romney ordered local magistrates to either perform homosexual marriage ceremonies or resign. That came from the governor's office, not from the legislature and not from the state Supreme Court. And he also ordered that state marriage licenses be changed so that they no longer said husband and wife, but said partner A and partner B.
Wait a minute. That sounds like Obama.
Well, it's exactly what it's what came out of the executive office of the governor, that being Mitt Romney. So it is accurate to say that so-called homosexual marriage would never have actually been implemented in Massachusetts except by order of the office of Governor Mitt Romney.
Now, Gary, from a political perspective as well, I've said many times, if Romney had stood up to the Supreme Court in Massachusetts, don't you think it would have made him a hero in the Republican Party?
Well, I think that's exactly what he had in mind, and so he postured himself to appear as if he was doing so on that issue and on the abortion issue. I mean, here's a guy who at age 58 had already run for governor and U.S. senator. His father was a governor and a candidate for president way back in 1968. He was raised in a pro-life, pro-family church. And yet only at age 58 does he ask us to believe that he suddenly discovered his core values and became pro-life and pro-family. But prior to that, he had spent his entire public policy career and career as a candidate aggressively promoting abortion on demand and homosexual activists' political agenda. Even after he claims to have seen the light on these types of issues, he signed into law Romney Care, which includes a $50 copay for abortion on demand. He also supports state-level sexual orientation laws, which are the single biggest threat to religious liberty
now
in America today.
And that's after living in Massachusetts, where he saw firsthand the effect of those laws being used to persecute Christians, to persecute the Catholic Church's adoption agency, and yet he still did not condemn such laws.
On Meet the Press in late 2007, just to show you how convoluted, you really have to have a scorecard to keep up with him. He said on Meet the Press that, as opposed to his previous position of endorsing and promising to co-sponsor Barney Frank's federal gay rights law, that as
that's ENDA, right? The Employment Non-Discrimination Act.
Correct. That he had previously endorsed it, promised to co-sponsor it, said he'd be more effective than Ted Kennedy at actually getting it passed. But in November 2007, as a presidential candidate, he said he no longer supported that federal bill. And the reason he said he no longer supported the federal bill is because he had found from experience that state-level gay rights legislation had imposed too big a burden on churches and businesses and individuals. But when pressed on the issue, he said that he still supported such laws at the state level. I mean, an absolutely illogical position to say that you no longer support the federal version because of what you witnessed happen under the state versions, but you still support states having those laws.
Wow. Now we're spending more time on Romney than other candidates, obviously. But tell us, why did the some in the pro-family movement, some leaders, get behind this guy?
Well, in some
was it the money? Was he passing out money? What happened?
In some cases, I think that was precisely the reason. There were organizations like Massachusetts Citizens for Life who had been critical, for example, of his decision to require Catholic hospitals in Massachusetts to have to provide the morning after pill. And they had been critical of his position on the life issue, received large cash donations from Romney or a member of his family, and suddenly were praising him as having always been a friend of life and a friend of family values. And that was the case with any number, according to the media, any number of pro-family organizations received money from Romney or the Romney campaign or one of Romney's various political action committees or supporters. So that's not an encouraging thing, but it was absolutely astounding as I was in some of those meetings in Washington back during the last presidential cycle to see people so willing to ignore, even cover up. And I'm talking about people pro, quote unquote, pro-family leaders in various states, so willing not only to ignore but to cover up Romney's clear record of promoting abortion on demand and the homosexual agenda.
Yeah, it was amazing to see. Okay, let's move on. You've done Romney. We've got about 10 minutes total left, or a little bit more, to get some of these other candidates. So let's get some quick assessments. Go ahead.
Well, I've got a list here, and if I miss somebody, Governor Pawlenty of Minnesota, I'm not as, because he's a first-time candidate, not as perhaps in-depth informed about his record, but there are some encouraging things there. He has said that if elected president, he would attempt to reimpose the ban on open homosexuality in the United States military, certainly saluting for that. Last year, he vetoed a bill that would have given a homosexual partner rather than the family of a person who has died control over that person's body in terms of a funeral. That's the only quote-unquote gay rights piece of legislation I'm aware of that he faced.
Yeah, I believe he wasn't super strong on the original the gay rights law that passed in Minnesota, but
that could be the case.
Yeah. Okay. What about Sarah Palin? What do you think about it seems to me like Sarah Palin has been sort of AWOL on this issue, especially with the military, the homosexuals in the military issue, as a leader in the Republican Party, as a conservative so-called Tea Party leader all across the country. She could have spoken out, but she didn't speak out, Gary.
Well, even back when she was selected as a vice presidential candidate, Family Policy Network, which is headquartered in Washington, familypolicy.net, had raised concerns about her. Specifically, she vetoed a bill that would have prohibited the use of tax dollars to provide spousal-type benefits to the homosexual partners of state employees that passed the Alaska legislature, and she vetoed it, deferring to a Supreme Court decision that said that the constitutionally the state was mandated to have to provide same-sex benefits to state employees.
So we're talking kind of similar to Romney here. They're using the courts almost to say they had to do this. Now, I can't imagine if there was a Governor Glenn in Alaska and the court said that you have to do something that you know, you have to subsidize, support these homosexual relationships. I can't imagine you signing or vetoing a pro-family bill and then blaming it on the courts.
The founder of the Democratic Party, Thomas Jefferson, and the founder of the Republican Party, Abraham Lincoln, both presidents of the United States, both took the position that the Constitution of the United States authorized and empowered them as freestanding branches of government, equal with a system of checks and balances, to determine for themselves what they believed to be constitutional and not constitutional, and that they were not to simply be subservient to the dictates of five life-appointed Supreme Court justices who are in no way accountable to the people. And Lincoln and Jefferson both said that if you reach that notion that five people have the power to dictate every single issue that we face as citizens of this country, that we'd have a judicial oligarchy. We would no longer have a representative Republican democracy.
Okay, so Gary, go back to Romney. What would you have done, you got 40 seconds, had you been faced with that Supreme Court decision in Massachusetts?
Well, he would have had to have done nothing more than what the Massachusetts legislature did, i.e. ignore it. They did not change the statutory law. Romney should have just ignored it, and instead he issued orders which actually implemented homosexual marriage in Massachusetts.
Right, and now he wants credit as being anti-gay marriage or for traditional marriage, but there's a book coming out too which is going to reveal a lot more, Gary. You might be aware of that. It's going to be coming out soon, and it's going to expose that record. So we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to Americans for Truth Hour, our last segment with Gary Glenn. Four interviews. You can get them all at americansfortruth.org. Hit the Americans for Truth Hour button on the right. Okay, Gary, let's hit some of these other candidates. Anything more you have on Palin?
Well, in addition to that one bill that she vetoed, I know there have been some questions raised about a couple of tweets that she sent out over the last couple of weeks that seem to suggest sympathy for the lame duck Democratic Congress forcing open homosexual behavior onto the military. And she expressed her support for the Conservative Political Action Conference having GOP Proud, the openly homosexual activist group, as a sponsor of one of the Washington, D.C.'s oldest conservative gatherings. So that was what led the Heritage Foundation, the American Family Association, Concerned Women for America, not to participate. And Sarah said she thought the homosexual activists should be there as a sponsor of a supposedly conservative conference. So some question marks certainly raised there.
Yeah, I think she has a reputation that exceeds what the actual record is on these issues. I mean, on life issues, of course, she's got that amazing story. As one with a Down syndrome brother who has Down syndrome myself, I respect her position on life. But it seems on the homosexual issue, she's afraid of it. I mean, that's the sense I'm getting.
Well, and there are others, for example, Mitch Daniels, governor of Indiana, by executive order, just like liberal Democrat governor Jennifer Granholm did here in Michigan, Mitch Daniels issued an executive order adding sexual orientation and even gender identity to the state's non-discrimination policy regarding state employees. So Mitch Daniels issued a gay rights executive order, the very thing that we consider to be one of the biggest threats to religious freedom in this country.
I did not know that, and that's amazing because Bobby Jindal, he took it down. When Bobby Jindal got in Louisiana, he removed that executive order that had been put in by a Democrat. Do you remember that?
That's correct, and Mitch Daniels added it. Mitch Daniels, the Republican, added it in Indiana, and our counterpart, Micah Clark with AFA Indiana, of course, was a stalwart in resisting that and trying to get people to oppose that, had some difficulty getting other pro-family groups to stand with him in opposing that executive order from Governor Daniels. But
that's incredible, Gary. And I, of course, we're not a political show. We can't endorse candidates or anything. But nope. I do not think that would serve him well among pro-family constituents.
I think he'd be a non-starter because of that very thing.
But he's also said that, and he's also made the comment that we should go neutral on the social issues, or
right.
What's the wording he chose? We shouldn't really be focusing. Let's take a break on those and focus on economic issues.
And again, some of these guys are first timers, and so I'm not as informed, as in depth as perhaps I might be on some of the people who ran in 2008. But for example, Chris Christie has said that he publicly supports homosexual civil unions, which are homosexual marriage and everything but name, and which all the homosexual activist groups clearly say, if we get that, we know it eventually leads to full-fledged homosexual marriage, because after a generation, who's going to care about the difference between the legal label you attach to it, union, marriage, and it'll make it that much easier down the line to just legalize full-fledged homosexual marriage.
Now, what about Huckabee? Huckabee is not for civil unions.
I am unaware of any aspect of this issue on which Governor Huckabee is weak. He was a champion of his state's marriage protection amendment. He was a pro-life champion. I was supportive of Governor Huckabee as an individual in 2008, had the opportunity to discuss the issue. He actually did a video message praising the work of the American Family Association of Michigan for our banquet last year. So I'm not aware of any aspect of this issue on which his record is anything but solid. And certainly I'm hopeful that I won't ever find that there's anything like that. So he is the one candidate of those who are talked about, and he just so happens to be leading all of the polls in all of the early primary states. In fact, tied here in Michigan with Mitt Romney, according to a poll in December, leading in Iowa by double digits and in South Carolina. You also have Ron Paul.
Of course, but a lot of the economic conservatives don't like Huckabee, so it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out.
That's true. Ron Paul was one of the very fringe handful of Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives who voted in favor of gaying down the United States military, who voted against the Marriage Protection Amendment. And I've heard the radio, in addition to those two recorded votes, I've heard the radio interview in which Ron Paul rejects the notion that there's anything wrong with homosexual behavior, and he only barely acknowledges in the radio interview, maybe you could put it up on your website for your listeners to hear, Pete, but he only barely acknowledges that the Bible even says that there's anything wrong with homosexual behavior. So on this issue, Ron Paul is also a non-starter, even though he's right on some economic issues.
Sounds to me like he got his mind has been dulled by libertarian excess.
And former Utah Governor John Huntsman, when he came to Michigan last year had scheduled several fundraisers around the state, until it was reported in the press that Governor Huntsman supported homosexual civil unions, former governor of Utah of all places. And when that came out in the press, the Grand Rapids Republican Party canceled his fundraising appearance with their local party. We praised them for doing so, and now John Huntsman is talking about potentially being a candidate for president. That may mean he splits the vote with Romney. It's possible Romney doesn't even carry Utah. Romney only carried three states, despite spending $100 million last time around. He only carried Michigan, where he was born, Massachusetts, where he was governor, and Utah, which is his religious home. With Huntsman in the race, it's possible Romney wouldn't even carry Utah. And finally, another one I have on my list, Rick Santorum, is talking about running for president. You know, we've never had, to my knowledge, an openly homosexual White House press secretary. But Rick Santorum's press secretary in the United States Senate was openly homosexual. One of the rules of the public policy process that Morton Blackwell taught us all was that personnel is policy. And wouldn't it be something if you had a president of the United States and the first president to have an openly homosexual press secretary was a Republican, supposedly a conservative Republican, Rick Santorum. And I know conservatives in Pennsylvania were angry at him when he endorsed Arlen Specter in the primary back in 2004, I believe it was. I spoke in Scranton, Pennsylvania, right after that primary. And the conservative grassroots were anything but happy with Rick Santorum. So, you know, there are weaknesses in a lot of these candidates, like your organization, Pete. AFA Michigan does not endorse or oppose any candidate. We're a nonprofit, so I'm speaking in my capacity as an individual American. I supported Mike Huckabee in 2008, among other things, because I trusted him on this issue. And a lot of these other candidates, and I'm not as thoroughly versed with Rick Pawlenty's record, but he appears to be on the right track. A lot of these other candidates certainly have give us reason not to trust them on this issue.
Well, Gary, we got a minute left in this interview, and what I want you to do is take that final minute and tell what you're, you know, give some hope to people who want to get involved and, you know, why they need to get involved, as opposed to this liberal Christianity thing of, you know, let's avoid the social issues, let's not be confrontational.
Well, number one, because we have an obligation and a duty to do what's right, no matter what the world says. You know, we're going to face our maker someday, just like everybody else. And if we imagine how we're going to be held accountable there, then what anybody says here on earth doesn't get, you know, appear too intimidating. But aside from that spiritual obligation, look at the results of all the marriage amendments that have been on the ballot in 30 states with an average percentage in support of over 60%. The one candidate for president who appears to be most solid on this issue is leading all the national polls. There's reason for hope. Take a stand. Do it for your family, for your children, your grandchildren. Do it because it's right. And be bold in doing so. And
amen.
Pete, I salute you for everything you do.
You too, Gary. God bless. And everybody get out there, go back, listen to these interviews, and keep up the fight. God bless you.
This was the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in Saturdays at 11 p.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Stay informed and engaged on the issues of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with them as they work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. The Americans for Truth Hour, Saturdays at 11 p.m. on AM 1160.